Alexander Hamilton. My name is Alexander Hamilton. And there's a million things I haven't done. But just you wait, just you wait.
It's taken Broadway and much of the nation by storm. The musical Hamilton has sparked renewed interest in the man whose face graces the $10 bill. And I guess it was bound to happen, but we here at Cityscape have finally caught Hamilton fever.
Alexander Hamilton,
Alexander Hamilton,
when America sings for you.
Hi, I'm George Bodarkey. On today's show, we're all about Alexander Hamilton. And so is Karen Quinones these days. She leads historic walking tours in Lower Manhattan, including one focused on Alexander Hamilton and the man who took his life, Aaron Burr. Karen joins me now on the phone. Karen, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Thanks for having me, George.
So take us back in time, Karen. What was Alexander Hamilton's New York like?
Oh, wow. Well, you know, in some ways, I think we can identify with it today, and that it was different from the other towns in the colonies, and that it was originally Dutch, conquered by the British. And as originally a Dutch town and colony, it was a little more open-minded than the other places in the colonies. So it wasn't unusual in old colonial and Revolutionary War in New York to have people here from many different places, who spoke different languages and practiced different religions. So in that way, I think it would be pretty, you know, recognizable to New Yorkers today. But of course, you know, none of the technology or communication or anything we have would have been present. So in that way, it would have seemed pretty primitive. It was also small. New York City only ran from Lower Manhattan, from Chambers Street to where Battery Park is. It's only about 3/4 of a mile. So it was literally just that little triangle on the tip of the island. North of that, just woodland and farms.
Hamilton himself was from another place.
He was, like lots of New Yorkers, and I think that's why a lot of people can identify with him. He was from the Caribbean. His parents never married, so he was raised only by his mother, and only till he was about 11 years old when she died, and then he was raised by friends of the family. So I think some people really can identify with that. He came to New York by himself and started an entirely new life for himself, which many of us New Yorkers have done.
There has been some controversy about how old he was, that in fact maybe he lied about his age.
Yeah, it seems to be pretty accepted that he presented himself to be 2 years younger than he actually was. You know, and at that time, young men went to college at about 15. And so when he got here, if he was a couple years older, you know, he would have been a little old for college, so he presented himself to be a bit younger, so he would fit in a bit better.
So what did he do here in New York when he arrived?
Well, when he arrived in New York, you know, he wanted to attend a school called King's College. Today that would be Columbia College of Columbia University. But he didn't have the prerequisites for admission, so he went over to New Jersey, what they would have called Elizabethtown, or we call it Elizabeth today, and he attended school there for a time where he was able to put together the prerequisites to be admitted into King's College, which he then attended. He didn't finish King's College. The Revolutionary War got in the way, so he went off, you know, became an officer in the war, returned, continued his education, And then he went on to study for the bar and pass the bar exam.
So was he on the front lines in the Revolutionary War?
He was Washington's aide, so that meant he would have been, and that he would have been an aide to Washington. But he didn't see as much what we might call action as he always wanted to.
So he was a man who wanted to be right in the midst of things.
Exactly. And, you know, and ironically, you know, I'm sure we're going to talk about him as our conversation goes on. Young Aaron Burr was a colonel actually fighting on the front lines during that time.
Huh. Yeah, we're going to talk about that famous duel that led to Alexander Hamilton's death in just a bit. So how did he then from there move on to become the first Treasury Secretary?
Well, that's a really great story. Comes back to New York. He gets married. He marries Philip Schuyler's daughter, Elizabeth or Eliza. He studies for the bar exam, passes the bar, sets up a legal practice in New York City. And then at that time, there was a lot of debate over what our new government should be like. We just fought the war. We won. We're kind of a whole loosely coordinated group of states. And Hamilton and a number of other men felt we needed a more unified government, and they put out this idea that we needed a new type of centralized government, which, of course, became the Constitution. We call it a constitutional convention. Hamilton is the only person from New York to attend. New York and Virginia were very skeptical about this idea of a more powerful central government. Hamilton goes off to the Constitutional Convention. The Constitution is written, and New York and Virginia had many reservations over this new type of government. In response to those reservations, Alexander Hamilton, John Jay, who will go on to be our first Chief Justice of the Supreme Court and a governor of our great state of New York, and James Madison, a future president, got together. They wrote 85 articles that we today call the Federalist Papers, and those are addressing the fears of New York and Virginia. And even after the Federalist Papers, New York was very skeptical. We had a big ratification convention. All this arguing went on. Hamilton spoke himself for 6 hours in defense of the Constitution. And ultimately, New York came up with a ratification document. And interestingly, in that document, New York wanted a number of changes to the Constitution. Those changes became what today is known as the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments. And really neat, once they decided on that, they had a big parade in Lower Manhattan with a giant ship called the Hamilton that went down the Broadway from where City Hall is today, down to Battery Park, and back up through the dock section up to where Chinatown is today. So finally the ratification happened. Washington was chosen to be our president. He arrived in New York and on April 30th, 1789, took the oath of office as our first president of the United States of America. He then named Hamilton as first Secretary of the Treasury.
Hamilton helped found the first national bank, the U.S. Mint, and the Revenue Cutter Service, which was a tax collection bureau, right?
Right. He also brilliantly is going to negotiate how we're going to pay off our debt at the end of the American Revolution. At the end of the war, all of the states had their own debts they had to pay. And Hamilton knew that as a young and new nation, we would need to establish credit with other nations as a nation for future trade. And he negotiated with the Virginians on Maiden Lane at Thomas Jefferson's home a deal where the federal government assumed the debts of the states, would pay it off, and in return, Virginia, who initially objected to that plan, would receive the capital city of the United States of America.
He also founded a newspaper that would go on to be one that we still know today, the New York Post, right?
Exactly. I check the New York Post every morning for their brilliant covers.
And he created the New York Evening Post. Was that what it was called back then?
It was called then, and the editor was a fine man named William Coleman, a very well-educated man, and one of the more reputable newsmen of that time.
You mentioned Karen Eliza, Hamilton's wife. Was that a beautiful love story? What was their story?
I think so. I think, you know, Hamilton really did, you know, love Eliza. Growing up without a family of his own, Burr also grew up without a family. He also was an orphan like Hamilton. I think drove both of these men to really want to have a fulfilling personal life. So Hamilton meets Eliza, and they really are great for each other. You know, she's an intelligent woman, and she's a loyal and dedicated woman, someone with whom he can discuss intellectual things, but who would never overshadow him in public. She was a wonderful mother. They had 8 children together. And Hamilton loved his family and his children, and they just seemed to be a really great match for each other.
That said, Hamilton was the subject of one of America's first highly publicized political sex scandals.
Horrible, that whole thing with Mariah Reynolds when the Capitol was in Philadelphia and he was, you know, in Philadelphia serving as Treasury Secretary. He was blackmailed by a woman with whom he had an affair and her husband. And he paid off the blackmail less in fear that his affair would be known and more in fear that he would be seen as corrupt as Secretary of the Treasury. And he later then wrote a whole pamphlet describing the whole affair and aftermath that he had published.
Hamilton died in a duel with Vice President Aaron Burr. So what were the circumstances that led up to that duel?
That is such a great question because the two men's lives are so entwined. And, you know, they're rivals for quite a period of time, Hamilton being a staunch Federalist, Burr being sort of an anti-Federalist, but sometimes he supported the Federalists as well. But really, what really gets them going is the gubernatorial election in New York in 1804. When I researched that election, I found it to be one of the most horrible yellow journalism affairs in the state's history. Aaron Burr was vice president in 1804. President was Thomas Jefferson. Burr was not going to be running for vice president, so he chose to run for governor of New York. Burr, of course, is getting together who would be called the Burrites or the Anti-Federalists to support him. But against him is a faction run by DeWitt Clinton, later himself who's going to be governor of New York. DeWitt Clinton, interestingly, despises not only Burr but Hamilton, and his newspaper, run by a guy named James Cheatham, is going to trash both of those guys on a regular basis. But more notably, the paper will trash Aaron Burr. Now, Hamilton during this time is up in Albany. He's resumed his law practice, and he's arguing before the Supreme Court in Albany, which he did quite often. And he was at dinner at a friend's house, and at dinner he kind of went off on this tear about Burr, that Burr was a dangerous man, people should not elect him, he would be dangerous as governor, you know, his moral shortcomings and all of this sort of thing. And one of the attendees of that dinner wrote it all down, and they sent a letter to Aaron Burr. So Burr wrote Mr. Hamilton a letter enclosing the other letter, asking Hamilton as a gentleman to please acknowledge or disavow his knowledge of these things. And Hamilton wrote back a letter saying, well, you know, I go to this gentleman's home often for dinner, and since you really can't tell me which day it was, I can't say for sure what I did or didn't say, and as you know, as we've been rivals for a long time, it wouldn't be unusual for me to speak out against you. And this kind of upsets Burr, and he writes back again saying, you know, I hope that the code of gentlemen would supersede politics, and again, I ask you to acknowledge or disavow these rumors. And Hamilton kind of says to the gentleman delivering the letter, William Van Ness, look, I'm not going to respond. And Van Ness kind of, maybe you should just say you didn't say it. And Hamilton still refuses, and he says, you know, let Burr do what he has to do. And Burr, as a result, challenges him to what is now the infamous duel.
Yeah, and that duel took place in New Jersey, am I right?
That's right. Duels were illegal in New York, and trust me, it didn't stop anybody from dueling. I was shocked to find the number of duels that were occurring in New York at that time, but really in New Jersey on behalf of New Yorkers. So it wasn't unusual at dawn to see a couple boats row over to Weehawken, New Jersey, and guys to duel and return home to New York.
I guess it was kind of like, meet me at the flagpole at 3 o'clock, right?
It was wild. Like I said, there were newspaper publishers who were dueling, you know, Supreme Court justices who were dueling, you know, guys were going over there dueling on a regular basis.
Alexander's eldest son was killed in a duel under similar circumstances in the same location as his father.
That's right. His oldest son, Philip Hamilton, was in a duel with a New Yorker named George Eager. Eager was an anti-federalist and had criticized Hamilton and some of the things he said. And young Philip Hamilton and a friend ran into Eager at the theater one night. Supposedly they had had a little to drink and kind of some insults flew back and forth. And Eager wound up dueling with both young men, but killing only Philip Hamilton.
Alexander Hamilton is interred at Trinity Church in Lower Manhattan. He was a parishioner there. Was he very active in the church?
He was not. And, you know, really horribly, it took him a day to die from the wound inflicted in the duel. It was a very long and painful death. And I forgot who it was. The rector of Trinity Church at the time refused to come and give him his last rites, because he said he never saw Hamilton attend services. And it turned out that two prominent New Yorkers, I think it was John Jay and Gouverneur Morris, went and pretty much, you know, coerced him into coming to comfort Hamilton in his last moments.
Now, I know, Karen, you lead tours, Revolutionary War tours of Lower Manhattan, history tours of Lower Manhattan. And you told me that in years past, not many people visited Alexander Hamilton, but that all has changed.
It's really amazing. For 10 years, I would walk my tour through the Trinity Graveyard, and there'd be a handful of people here and there. But for the last year, a number of graves have been really popular. Of course, Hamilton and his wife Eliza is buried there along with him. So lots of people go there and leave mementos on the grave. They leave coins and flowers and little rocks and things. Another grave that's become popular as a result of the musical is someone almost no one ever heard of, Hercules Mulligan. Friend of Hamilton's and a member of the Sons of Liberty, who's also buried there. Lots of mementos left now on Hercules Mulligan's grave. And Hamilton's sister-in-law, Angelica Schuyler Church, who may or may not be buried in the grave we think she's in. Trinity Church themselves are not sure. Lots of people leave mementos near her grave as well. You can't actually get to her grave right now. There's a fence around it. But people leave things nearby in her behalf, too.
So besides the grave sites, where can we go in Lower Manhattan to experience Hamilton history?
Well, we can go to, of course, Trinity Church. You can walk down the street from Trinity Church along Wall Street. We're at Wall and William Street. You'll find the Museum of American Finance. And right in the stone there, inlaid, is the original cornerstone from the Bank of New York, founded by Hamilton in 1784, the oldest bank in the nation today. On the site of the Bank of New York is the Museum of American Finance. And on the second floor, they have a Hamilton room in honor of Hamilton, their founder. You can also walk down a little further to where Pearl and Wall is, where the Merchant's Coffee House was. In the Merchant's Coffee House in 1791, Secretary of the Treasury Hamilton orchestrated the first bailout of nearly bankrupt New York banks.
What about watering holes? Did he hang out at places like Francis Tavern, which is still standing and open?
Sure, you can go down to Francis Tavern. Before the war, that would have been the Queen's Head Tavern, where young Hamilton likely would have met with leaders of the Sons of Liberty. And then after the war, of course, Washington gives his farewell address at Francis Tavern, and certainly Hamilton would have been present for that.
So, Karen, have you been able to score a ticket to the very, very popular musical Hamilton?
I have. I saw it in April. I had a very nice client who had an extra ticket and invited me to accompany her. The seats were fifth row. It was really wonderful, and I enjoyed the musical tremendously, even though I'm not the sort of person who really even likes musicals, but I had a great time, and I think it was very well done and very inspirational.
So, Karen, knowing the history so well, how do you think the musical did in terms of accurately representing that history?
Well, you know, there were some really historically accurate things and some things that were inaccurate, but, you know, dramatic license, when you put on a show or any kind of play, you have to be able to tell a story. Sometimes the history doesn't quite fit the story or the drama that you need, so you change things around. But I don't think anything that got changed or added or left out, you know, really in any way negatively affected the story. I thought one of the things that the musical really does is that it humanizes Hamilton in a way that you also see his faults and you kind of get an idea of how those faults ultimately led to the duel.
So, Karen, now you are offering Hamilton walking tours, correct?
I am. I've added to my list of tours an Alexander Hamilton walking tour, and it's actually a Hamilton and Burr tour, because as I was researching Hamilton, I found that you really can't tell the story of one without telling the story of the other, and they are two incredibly intelligent, fascinating men, and I think the duel really does them both an injustice. Since we remember them both through the duel, we really don't see them as the types of interesting men they are. And on the tour, you actually find out some very interesting things about Aaron Burr and his very unorthodox thoughts about women and their intellectual capabilities.
So I'd like to invite
everybody to come along and learn about who these two amazing men really were.
Yeah, I was going to say, you piqued my interest. I will have to get on that tour to learn more all about that.
Well, you know, you're invited to come anytime.
And your website, Karen, for people to find out more?
It's patriotstoursnyc.com.
Karen, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, George.
Karen Quinones leads historic walking tours in Lower Manhattan. Once again, her website is patriottoursnyc.com. While Karen's Hamilton tour is concentrated in Lower Manhattan, you can also get your Hamilton fix uptown, and you don't need to score a ticket to the Broadway musical to do it. The New York Historical Society at 170 Central Park West is celebrating what it calls the Summer of Hamilton. It involves a new exhibition of rarely seen objects, artworks, and historical artifacts, as well as movie screenings and other events exploring Alexander Hamilton's life and legacy. You'll even find life-size bronze statues depicting Hamilton and Aaron Burr in the midst of their deadly duel in the museum lobby. I recently paid the museum a visit to find out more.
I'm Margie Hofer. I'm the museum director and vice president at the New York Historical Society.
So, Margie, the big question, have you seen Hamilton on Broadway?
I'm one of the lucky ones. I did see Hamilton on Broadway when it was still in preview last July.
And what's your review of Hamilton?
Fabulous. It sounds so implausible, but from the moment it starts, it's absolutely magical.
But now you are celebrating Hamilton here this summer at the New York Historical Society.
Yes, we're taking advantage of the great excitement surrounding Alexander Hamilton, someone who was really, until recently, known mostly for his image on the $10 bill, and now his name is on everyone's lips, and he's a new hero.
What fascinates you most about Hamilton's life?
Well, I think the incredible range of his intellect is really striking, and I have to say, in the work we've done in pulling together the materials to display for our Summer of Hamilton, he had his fingers in everything. He was a little bit like a Forrest Gump of the era, and he had this incredibly sharp and incisive mind. But there are also letters that we'll have on display that are hopelessly romantic.
Such as what?
There is a love letter he wrote to Eliza a few months before they married, and he talks about how he can't stop thinking of her. Every waking moment he's thinking of her. He meets her in every dream, and he describes how he's been metamorphosed from a statesman and a soldier into a puny lover. So there's great emotional range in him, and that's really exciting to discover on the handwritten page.
Let's talk more about the Summer of Hamilton, because you have a lot in store here at the New York Historical Society.
We do. We have a whole range of programs. We did a major exhibition on Alexander Hamilton in 2004, and we didn't feel it was appropriate to simply recap what we had done. And instead, we have put together a real feast of different activities and displays. And throughout the summer and into the fall, we will have an exciting range of materials on display. The visitors meet right when they walk into our building these life-size bronze statues of Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton, pistols drawn, ready to shoot. And we find that our visitors are fascinated by all of the physical detail. You can see Hamilton's spectacles. Everyone wants their picture taken with Hamilton, but not with Burr. And then we have a range of paintings and sculpture and objects and letters. The replica pistols that they used in the duel, which are owned by J.P. Morgan Chase. And we have the originals here periodically, but when they're not here, we have these very precise replicas.
What are among the other objects that you have, the historical objects, the real deal?
Well, there are portraits of Hamilton, Burr. There's a really touching pair of portraits by John Vanderlyn of Aaron Burr and his daughter, Theodosia. And we learned a bit about Theodosia in the musical, and they had an extremely close relationship. And Aaron Burr, I think one of his very redeeming qualities was that he truly believed in the capabilities of women and the importance of educating women. And the story of his relationship with Theodosia and all he did to nurture her her education and nurture her personally is very moving. So you get to meet those two. And then there are also images of, and these are all period images, of Hamilton contemporaries, Washington and Lafayette and John Jay, figures like that. Among the other objects, there is a mourning ring, a small ring with a locket of Hamilton's hair. And that was presented by Eliza to Nathaniel Pendleton a number of months after his death. Pendleton was his second in the duel. And we also have in our library the letter that Eliza wrote to Pendleton when she said that she wanted him to wear this ring. And she said that a jeweler will show up to take the measurement of his finger. So that very small, humble object is quite moving in itself.
Hamilton's eldest son also died in a duel. Is that at all reflected in this exhibition?
Actually, I don't think we have any objects or documents that speak to that event specifically. But certainly there are a number of events surrounding the Hamilton-Burr duel that really flesh out that whole process that I think just seems so foreign and unlikely to us today. There is a letter that Hamilton wrote to Pendleton on July 4th, so a week or so before the duel. The duel didn't happen just on a whim. It was scheduled. So both men had time to set their affairs in order. And Hamilton wrote Pendleton a letter because he had asked Pendleton to be his executor and needed to let him know details about his financial affairs. So there certainly are items that shed light on this bizarre dueling. On Friday evenings, it is pay as you wish. So every Friday evening during the summer, we have some special Hamilton event planned. We will be screening videos of some of the musicals that inspired Lin-Manuel Miranda, including Jesus Christ Superstar, Evita, and 1776. We will have trivia games, a whole feast of activities on the Friday evenings.
You also have activities and events specifically geared toward kids.
We do. We have a wonderful summer camp for middle school age children called Camp History that takes place every August. And this summer it will be themed around Hamilton. The kids will study the details of his life using original documents and objects. And they will also be doing writing projects, writing their own life stories. And we have many other family programs around Hamilton, treasure hunts and history detective games. In addition, we have teacher workshops that will be organized around the theme of Hamilton so that teachers can also capitalize on this great interest in Hamilton and in Revolutionary era history and bring that into the classroom.
What are your hopes for the summer of Hamilton here at the New York Historical Society?
Well, at the Historical Society, we're thrilled to see such great renewed interest and enthusiasm for the Revolutionary era, for the Founding Fathers. And our hope is that we can take advantage of the specific interest in Hamilton and interest children and New Yorkers, people in general, in history more broadly, and also to really help deepen their understanding of the Hamilton they think they know from the musical and realize that there are extraordinary objects and documents that will help them better understand the real Hamilton.
If you had an opportunity, Margie, to have a sit down with Alexander Hamilton, what would you want to ask him?
Wow. Well, I guess I'm dying to know what we missed. What he died at age 49. If he had lived another 20 years, what would he have accomplished? What more could he have done? So I would want to sit down with an Alexander Hamilton at age 60. And asked him what he'd been up to the previous decade or two.
Margie, thank you so much.
Thank you, George.
That was Margie Hofer. She's Vice President and Director of the New York Historical Society. More information about the Summer of Hamilton at nyhistory.org. And that's it for this week's Cityscape. Never miss an episode by subscribing to our podcast on iTunes. I'm George Bodarkey. Thanks so much for listening.
Let me tell you what I wish I knew. When I was young and dreamed of glory, you had no control.
Who lives, who dies, who tells your story?
President Jefferson,
I'll give him this. His financial system is a work of genius. I couldn't undo it if I tried. And I've tried.
It's WFUV and WFUV HD, New York. Listener-supported public media from Fordham, the Jesuit University of New York. Music discovery starts here.